Hey, we're back in business. Thank you for your patience. Council will come back to order, and we'll have the last item of the day read, which is 122, please, Carla.
Item 122, Office of Equity and Human Rights, report on citywide employee discussion of institutional racism and police community relations in the aftermath of Ferguson.
I won't make for a long introduction because it's been a long day and there's important important reporting and discussion to come, but there are a number of ways in which I think Portland as a community has distinguished itself in its response to traumatic incidents in our country and how we've addressed those as a community. Not that we all sit in a circle and sing in three-part harmony, but because there are vociferous opinions and concerns and even protests, but I just want to say I think this presentation that we're going to hear here this afternoon is one more sign of health as a community and how we're taking on difficult issues, and I appreciate the two men who are before us to lead this off. So with that, Dante and Chief, welcome.
Well, thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I truly appreciate the opportunity to come in and present a little bit about what's been going on or what the office was able to facilitate. And I'm truly pleased that the chief is here with me. I invited the chief, and he was very immediately receptive to coming. You know, the conversations that we had and that you'll see and hear from obviously centered around police-community relations. And so the idea that, you know, I would be here presenting some suggestions or recommendations without the opportunity for the police chief to be here and comment and offer thoughts, I thought would be disingenuous. And so I'm really pleased that he readily accepted the invitation to be here. So just on three separate dates, December 3, 10, and January 7, a total of about 200 city employees came together to discuss the aftermath of the Ferguson grand jury decision. The topics of discussion centered around institutional and systemic racism, implicit bias, community police relations, police training, and the feeling by people of color of disempowerment and fear, as well as how those issues were created and fostered the tinderbox that exploded in the days following Ferguson. And then subsequent to Ferguson and the death of Michael Brown came other deaths in other cities that were high-profile deaths of black men or teenagers at the hands of the police. The Office of Equity and Human Rights felt it was important to provide a space for the voices to be heard and frustrations to be expressed. Conversations were happening at the water cooler, in the hallways, in units and cubes, and just really felt the need to provide a place for those voices to be heard. And by and large, the people who were attended were not out protesting anywhere. They were your employees who felt the need to be able to speak and just to be able to be present in the conversation. As I said, the meetings and the discussions were attended by a wide spectrum of city employees of diverse backgrounds and races. There were also police officers who were in attendance at each of the conversations, much respect to them, with their numbers increasing every time. The discussion began with thoughts of Ferguson and racism globally and turned to discussions about Portland and how Portland can improve police accountability and its own community relations. What I'd like to do first is there's a short video that Jeff Selby from my staff put together that I really think sets the tone and the context of this. And you may have seen it, and if you have, I beg your indulgence, because I really think it's important just to go on the record that this really set the tone for the conversation. So it's about 4 minutes long. It's not all silent.
Our goal today is really to allow people to just talk about this from an institutional perspective. The goal isn't to sit here and debate whether somebody did right, somebody did wrong as an individual.
Because we didn't want this to be about, you know, just purely beat up on police day, because police are part of a larger system, and it's not just about, you know, one cop and one kid, but it's bigger than that. And if we're going to talk about this as a movement and not just a moment in time, it's bigger than those two individuals in any one police department. It's what has created the systems and the institutions themselves that create people's lack of trust or fear or whatever it is that's creating the passion that you're seeing now.
And then you had this topic, Ferguson, which is so big. And I thought it was great that the city was kind of walking right into it, you know, knowing that it's hitting a lot of people in different ways, and let's just kind of take it on.
It's not just about Ferguson. This keeps happening. It's not the first time. It's not the first time in the past year. Like, it is about the fact that there is a structure in place that allows it to happen and to allow indictments to not happen.
One of the questions I asked was, how many of you have had a conversation about Ferguson in the last couple of weeks? Everybody raised their hand. But then how many of you have had an interracial conversation about Ferguson in the last couple of weeks? And about 15 people out of maybe 70 people in the room raised their hand, and I would say 10 of those were black folks. And so clearly we're not talking to each other. And that's another example of what needs to happen, is we need to be able to talk to each other so we can better understand the impacts being felt by folks who don't look like us on both sides of the aisle.
I spoke from the perspective of, and I think to the white audience in the room, about our role in stepping up and facing history and being willing to take off our blinders, which we have the luxury to choose to do, but that asking folks that it's really time to lean into spaces that are maybe uncomfortable for us.
And some of the issues with Ferguson is that, yes, there is over 60% black, but the problem is they don't have the power because they haven't been in the institution to gain power in order to change the rules and regulations that are in place.
My commitment is that I would capture this, I will compile it, and I will ensure that it's submitted to and read and heard by each of the city council and by the mayor's office. I just think that's important to know, for them to know the impact that this is having on employees every day.
There was a police officer there, and I was glad to see, I mean, this wasn't mandatory, so it was great to see someone representing law enforcement there.
I want to try and understand. There's a lot of people wearing this uniform that want to make a change, that are trying hard to make a change. We're not Ferguson, and we're not perfect, but we're trying to move in the right direction. And I really appreciate everybody talking and speaking from the heart today. Thank you.
And so I would suggest to begin to have these conversations. The continuing trainings that this office does, I think, creates a baseline of understanding about some of the issues of the day based on history and historical perspectives and historical aspects to institutionalized racism. And do your own work. It's not always up to somebody else to give you the answer. You know, do your own work.
This was the first one, and so then we hosted two more after this one. So what I wanted to do, as soon as I can figure out.
Now, are the other two posted online, too?
No, we didn't video other. This was kind of a
compilation
of those, yes. Thank you, sir. And so what I said I would do is compile what I heard. And they tended to be in categories. And initially was questions about what is it that's causing distrust? What is it that's creating the racial divide? And so it really broke down into themes. And inequity and bias, policing in the criminal justice system, historical and cultural injustices, and then denial and fear, essentially by the power structure. Breaking those down into some of the specific examples that people offered. And let me also say this. These were city employees, many who don't have much interaction specifically with the police bureau or the criminal justice system. And so these were their perceptions, and I am, in some sense, channeling them. what's here and what you'll see are not examples or suggestions or recommendations coming from my office at all. I committed to honestly presenting what I heard, essentially unfiltered. And so that's what you'll be seeing in through these slides. So in speaking of inequity and bias, the concern was, or the commentary was, that Portland's not a representative democracy in terms of the leadership not being reflective of the population. Can city council fix that? I don't know. But it's just a concern that ran through the conversation. And the reason my office exists, in some sense, is because the concern that system in place continues to foster institutional racism just through policies, practices, and procedures. In regard to policing and concerns, that there's a continuing disconnect between the police and community, and that the police are not considered a part of or feel a part of the communities that they police. Concerns about police training being insufficient or inadequate, and that words and images are powerful, and language that is often used is often offensive and dehumanizing, and just the better need to understand how we say impacts a large number of people. In regard to the historical or cultural, essentially we don't often address our history. It certainly is, as the office does our training, our equity training, it's telling how many people do not understand or know the history of the country and certainly don't know the history of the state of Oregon and or the city of Portland historically and the injustices and discrimination that existed legally and otherwise. The media does what it does in the way that it does it, which is also often slanted. Or does not address systemic issues. It focuses on one individual aspect of racism or discrimination, but doesn't look at it. It's not systemically aware. And then generally lack of cultural integration continues to create our inability to hear each other and interact with each other in a way that doesn't create defensiveness or other things like that. The denial and fear. The concern was that there's often an inherent fear or distrust of African Americans per se, just because we or they are African American automatically creates an inherent fear and distrust. So conversation about implicit bias and concern about that. And just in general, the denial that there is, in fact, a continuing racial problem in the country. It's a difficult conversation to talk about, and it's easy to find every other reason why something is happening. But the denial of the fact that there is a racial problem is a continuing difficulty. So I didn't want this, or we didn't want this just to be a venting session, but what could we talk about in terms of solutions? And as I said, the majority of the people who were there either don't have a lot of interaction with police or don't really understand the criminal justice system. So the recommendations, some of them were recommendations of things that I know the police bureau is already doing, has done, or it just cannot implement. And so most of those didn't really make it to this slide. I will be offering those to you, but I wanted to really offer the suggestions that I thought were specific and something that council could address. So the recommendation specific to police about officer training, that bias training is important, that everybody, police and everybody, must accept and own their own bias and recognize that we have it, and have the courage to create those conversations to talk specifically about fear and distrust on the part of both the community and the police, because it's not just a one-sided issue. And then continuing education for officers on bias, de-escalation techniques, and interpersonal skills. So it's not just a one-time in-service session once a year or every other year, however those come, but an ongoing basis for these conversations. Culture and policy change recommendations. And obviously the DOJ settlement is highly engaged in this process, but changing policies about engagement and expectations of those interactions. And then internal zero tolerance policies. So officers are visibly held accountable for behavior that is unacceptable. I think it's often that an officer may be disciplined or some type of sanction may occur, but it does not become known. Therefore, the assumption is nothing really happened. And so how do we, certainly understanding personnel issues, how do we make it a better, create more transparency in the fact that someone is, in fact, disciplined for behavior that's unacceptable?
Could you talk a little bit more about that? Because you're a bureau director. You know, there's a number of personnel issues that if it was somebody in a bureau other than the police bureau, it might be considered inappropriate to make that transparent that the person had done something wrong and had been disciplined for it.
Sure.
So,
I think, and I'm sure the chief can speak to this as well, but there are, I think, ways internally where someone can be removed from a particular position, transferred to telephone reporting unit in terms of where they are, what the investigation is, so that it's felt and seen that there has been some ramification to doing something inappropriate, wrong. And I think there are ways that it can be done that does not have to specifically describe and tell what the discipline was, but there are things that can be visibly seen that tell that story. Culture and policy change recommendations or thoughts from the employees was, you know, any bureau, this is a city. I mean, turning the city is a big ship in talking about culture change. But how do we create an environment where peer reporting does not lead to ostracizing when you try to do that? Conduct psychological exams more often instead of only upon hiring or after a police-involved shooting in order to root out possible changes in officer psyches after several years on the job in the work that they, certainly the hard work and hard interactions that they have to go through.
State Representative Lou Frederick talked about that in our legislative breakfast this morning, that he may introduce legislation to require that. Mm. So great minds think alike.
Okay. Thank you. And then community and police relations. And certainly the chief has made it top priority of his to really focus on that. So much respect to the chief in that regard. So obviously some of these occurred prior to the chief even coming into his position. So speaking about community engagement, just meeting communities face-to-face regularly, not only after an incident or an event, but engage in true community policing, no definition provided. And then create requirements or incentives for police to live in the communities that they serve. It's my understanding that this recommendation used to be in place, which was Portland used to have a home buying incentive for officers who wanted to live in the city of Portland in particular communities. And so is that an opportunity that exists to create something, again, similar to that? And other ideas in terms of using the Ranger program or the Fire Bureau, and create relationships in schools and through other grassroots efforts to attract officers of color. And I know many officers individually do that. I don't know that there's a strategy or structure specifically, systemically within the Bureau that would create those relationships with schools or through the Ranger program to use that as a pipeline for officers. And engage neighborhood structures, organizations, or groups more in the community policing. Diversifying the police bureau, and I know that's always been a huge issue and there's been a great amount of success in that regard the last couple of years. Question about criminal background investigations and criminal background checks, the policies. And I know this has changed some, so it's not quite as strict as this, in terms of somebody's example was if my cousin sold drugs years ago, it can prevent me from being hired by the city for public safety jobs. And I know now that the investigators and the personnel bureau are really looking independently on each of those cases. So this is not an automatic disqualifier as it maybe used to be So anyway.
So then we need to publicize that, right? Because there's obviously still employees who believe that's still the case.
Right. And I think overall, commissioners, and I think I've said this, I know I said it to the previous chief, is that the police don't tell their story well. And many things that are being done well don't get translated into the community's hearing. And so how do we tell that story better? How do we help them so that folks can have a better understanding of the good works that are happening? If you go to the awards or the promotional aspects of the ceremonies, you see the good works that happen. Buying tires for somebody living out of their car. I mean, it's amazing things that happen. The stories don't get told as broadly as I think they could.
Can I ask you a question about that? Because it goes back to something earlier in the PowerPoint about the views that people you talk to about the media. My guess is that if this chief had a great story to tell, the biggest challenge he would have is finding someone to put it above the fold on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we get in the habit of saying, you know, we collectively don't do a good job telling our story. But I'm going to offer a slightly provocative twist on that, which is how reflective of our community are the decision makers who decide what goes in the newspapers, the radio, and the TV? And you're the head of the Office of Equity. So you would be aware, for example, of distinguished African-Americans or Latino leaders in senior management positions of our newspapers, our radio, our TV, who are people with community roots who have an interest in telling stories that reflect their values, or perhaps people you pick up the phone when you get agitated about something in the newspaper because you want to talk to someone who may be culturally competent or has some history and you want to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've been looking at mastheads lately.
Yeah.
I've been looking at websites. It seems to me somewhat hidden.
It's not hidden. It's not there.
So the I get that this chief is, you could probably say in this environment, he's responsible for content and delivery.
Mm-hmm.
But why are we as a community accepting of that? That there aren't people with a broad range of experiences who are making decisions about what's newsworthy and what isn't,
mm-hmm.
what's important about what he's doing or not. And I've always been struck by the fact that I don't know why that whole sector gets a pass. I welcome the spotlight on us. I mean, we are elected officials. But we are not that. We have very little control over the filters that deliver the stories about what law enforcement or other things are doing.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point. I wish I had an answer. We have tried to solicit media engagement with many of the things that we've done, and I'm sure I know Chief has as well. But good work isn't always sexy, and it doesn't always make it above the fold. And so what do we do with that? You have more of a bully pulpit with the editors than I do. So I don't know how.
I just don't know if Joe is sending me a signal over here about freedom of the press. I support freedom of the press. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about some of the concerns that you're raising, this PowerPoint, applied to institutions in our community that have equal standing to the people here or the people at the table that somehow get a pass in this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we make it a broader discussion? That's not your job description. I get it. But I'd be curious to talk to you offline somehow. Who do you call to talk about, you know, a story you think may be skewed or insensitive or misses a narrative? And what's the experience of that person that you're able to share and relate to?
Right. No, I will get on your calendar. I would love that conversation because I don't have a great answer, but I think it's a conversation we need to have. So thank you. Kind of finishing up, again, in terms of diversifying, going back again to the Park Rangers program, create that pipeline. And also there was a comment, because there were a couple of Park Rangers who were there in attendance, and they suggested that the police could greatly benefit learning some of the Rangers' non-weapon carrying tactics of addressing difficult situations.
Hmm.
And then there were just a few suggestions that I thought related to all city employees that council could also comment on. An extension of a program to aggressively diversify the entire workforce. Every bureau has an affirmative action plan, but they're typically not evaluated or reported on. They get done, they get handed in, they go on a shelf, and then they come out again next year. And so what do we do with those? How do we report on those? And then hold managers and bureaus accountable for outcomes in hiring, as well as outcomes in outreach, certainly outreach, in order to hire more broadly. And then how do we engage, put performance measures in place for those folks engaged and involved in hiring? And then suggestion that cultural awareness in the workplace should be evaluated. Bureaus should conduct climate surveys to understand the impact of race at work. Some bureaus are, in fact, doing that. Some bureaus have, in fact, done that. And certainly the office, as my office is working now, each bureau will complete its own strategic equity, racial equity plan to be completed this year. So in some sense, each bureau will be engaged in that, but this is a little bit more of a request for something more in depth, specifically culture and climate of the individual bureaus. So that kind of concludes the suggestions and recommendations, as well as some of the concerns expressed. And as I said, there were about 200 people over the time that came, but there were, I think, a lot more people having that conversation and didn't know how to engage in it and didn't know who to engage in it with. And so this was really about trying to create that space for the conversation. And it was only expected that there would be one of these meetings. We had three because they asked for more, and we could continue to do this because there's that much need for some type of conversation and communication and ability to just be in a space where we can talk about things that we can't usually talk about comfortably. So, again, my goal was to present to you some of the thoughts and concerns and feelings and suggestions from your employees, and I hope some of these maybe resonated with you and create a continuing conversation when we go off of camera. So at this point, I would just like to ask the chief for his thoughts and comments. And he's seen this, and I know he has his own thoughts and feelings on this, and he's doing good work and just getting started for all the good work he's going to continue to do. So I look forward to working with him some more. So, Chief.
Thank you, sir. I want to thank Director James for his initiative and his thoughtfulness around hosting these three sessions around the Ferguson event. It really gave a place for city employees to have, you know, their thoughts, their pain, their concerns heard. I think all too frequently opportunities to have those conversations are ignored, and it's really time to lean into the difficult conversations and not shy away from them because they can be hard. This is a transformative time for the country and for my profession. You know, the events and conversation following Ferguson are a clear reminder that our country is still struggling with how race impacts all of our major institutions, such as education, employment, healthcare, housing, and all parts of the criminal justice system, to include the police. It's my belief that government needs to get this right above all, and the police profession needs to be at that front line of government getting it right first, due to our tremendous responsibility and authority that we have. Where am I taking the police bureau to address this? My focus for the police bureau is to build trusting relationships in all parts of the community, not just some parts of the community, not just most parts of the community, and have them work together on community priorities together to build safer and healthier neighborhoods. Another priority for me is to diversify the bureau and diversify the leadership of the police bureau, as well as to improve our knowledge and our action around equity. I'm fully committed to the Bureau achieving all points in the Department of Justice settlement agreement. I've hired an equity and diversity program manager who will work directly for me and have the responsibility and the authority to go anywhere in the police bureau and advise me on changes in policy, practice, and training that I need to make to ensure that we are inclusive and equitable. This kind of position is unheard of in a police department, but so critical. Our person starts next week. I'm also hiring an analyst who will be entirely dedicated to looking at all of our stops data. This analyst will have the background to understand some of the nuances behind that data, such as criminal justice inequities and implicit bias. And then together with that equity and diversity program manager, break that information down, share it as we come together as a community to discuss it. A diverse, well-trained, and educated workforce working together on community priorities is our path to continue to build trust in our community, as well as meeting the public safety needs that each part of our community needs. Know that the Police Bureau has hundreds of good, caring members who have dedicated their lives to community service, and that I'm very proud of them. Every week they risk themselves while saving lives and keeping people safe. I'm honored to be the chief of police of an organization that is filled with such people who do this great work every day, and they're committed to providing exceptional public service. And I'm confident in the path that we have charted, excited about the future, and ask that all of you be alongside us, working with us, and helping us to make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you both. Questions? Good work.
Thank you. I don't know if it's appropriate to ask if you'll accept the report. I know a couple of people have.
I think there's probably some folks that'd like to speak
to, and signed
then,
up.
We'll do that. You bet. So anyone chance to comment on this report, you're welcome. Chief Director James, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone like to comment on this?
I have 9 people who signed up.
Okay.
The first 3 are please coming up. Are Mark Pomeroy, Joe Walsh, and Crystal Alinsky?
Come on up.
Let's go ahead and go with Kelly Jones Weir.
Kelly may not be here either. So.
Thank you. And Mary Ng.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, I don't take this opportunity for granted. Thank you very kindly. I'm here to ask.
Or just put your name in the record. I'm sorry.
Mark Pomeroy is my name. I'm here, it wasn't in my notes. I'm here to ask the Portland Police Bureau and the applicable agencies to establish good, effective policies surrounding the use of deadly force. To solve this problem at hand, maybe we insist that the first 3 bullets in an officer's pistol are rubberized. Maybe this is a bad idea, but it's a compromise to the disarming a truly effective community policing agency. If the police bureau insists on its cowboy culture, training and education for the officers should include the highest standards of this cowboy culture. For example, when I was young, it was murder one to shoot my little brother in the back with a squirt gun. I ask that the policies be changed subject to the following test. Please think on this, for I think that the ramifications go quite deep. As long as it is possible to commit suicide by cop, we still have work to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Ng, welcome. Mary?
Hi, my name is Mary Ng. It's nice to see you all again. A few points I want to hit are Jason Sari, James Jahar Perez, and the OPB interview with the chief in which he discussed the utility of the white supremacist on the force. And then I want to point out to you that Don't Shoot PDX has made it into the Daily Mail, the UK newspaper, which is, to me, it really needs to happen there for England. My black friends in England said that the slaves were deported after they built the beautiful architecture, and they were chased down the streets of Manchester being called the N-word, and that they couldn't have a black barrister. They had to have a white male barrister. And so I think in some ways the fact that Portland is taking an international leadership role on issues of racism is something we can all be proud of and continue to push towards. Very unfortunately, Senator Wyden's event in Beaverton was secured by a Portland officer who had killed James Jahar Perez, the African-American here in Portland. And I wanted to draw attention to the larger issue of when we face undisciplined officers and a failure of proceedings towards unjust killings with a racial nature, and then we just sort of dump that officer over in another jurisdiction, we are perpetuating the problem and just sort of displacing it slightly, and I've tried to get some accountability from Wyden on how we can guarantee that we have a killer cop-free town hall in the future. And as the mayor or city council, I would suggest you perhaps could offer Senator Wyden a promise that his events will never be secured by an officer involved in killing an African American, because I think it sends a strong message of Jim Crow. I slipped the memory card to Fox News, and then Fox News, of course, did their drastic, terrible spin about don't shoot PDX. But I felt like Andy Warhol said, all publicity is good publicity, and it was worth the risk. And then it got into the Oregonian, and they called the activist classless once again, with Montel Williams jumping into the fray. The issue with describing the utility of the white supremacist, I think the city deserves an apology. I understand you're dancing around the...
Mary?
Yes.
Just for my edification, you said a police chief talked about the utility of the white supremacist.
OPB.
Who are you referring to?
Our new chief, O'Day, who I like him.
And just for those of us who didn't hear the interview...
Kruger. It was regarding a character called Kruger, who evidently wears swastikas on mountaintops when he worships Nazi leaders.
What did Chief O'Day allegedly say?
If you'll allow me a little bit of extra time, he described the utility of the officer. I was able to ask your wonderful spokesperson later on about how, what was meant, and do we all stand by that? And evidently, Kruger works in drugs and vice is no longer applicable to that department because that's now in a human trafficking area. But that phrasing of the officer's work to me it just cuts too close to the bone. It gouges us. It makes us feel uncomfortable and unsafe. And whether or not you agree with it from a freedom of speech or freedom of thought perspective, I think of it as more of a public relations nightmare. The Stormfront neo-Nazi website is promoting Portland's wonderful opportunities for neo-Nazis in policing, to me, is really disturbing. And we need to be aware that we're in an internet age, that these scandals aren't going away, and that we owe a duty of respect to the people who have fought for the civil rights movement, and that it's not enough to go to a white man diversity retreat. We must renounce our white skin privilege, which the Black Panthers said at an event my brother put on in Los Angeles. And I was really impacted by that. It's not enough to say you care. We really need to renounce the privileges, do away with the at-large system, and get some representative government here at City Council, some Black people in leadership. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh?
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. I would like to congratulate Dante and also the Chief of Police. The report itself I read, and I saw the video a number of times, and it's impressive. It's good stuff. Unfortunately, I saw it in 1971. Same stuff. Same video. Except it was not as easy this time. But we used the same words. We said we have to have accountability. We have to have police training. These were seminars in 1971 when we sat around and we tried to figure out what's wrong with our police department in San Diego, California. 1971, just before I was released from the Navy. We have moved one inch. In what, 40 years? We're going to have this 40 years from now, or are we going to do something? What we have here, folks, is four white people sitting up there making decisions. That should concern you. We have one woman out of five. That should concern you. We do not have equity here. We have racism. Racism. You had 200 of your employees gathered together who never have any dealings with the police or they'd be fired to tell you what it's like to deal with the police. 200 out of 9,000, if my math is right, 2%. That's what you got. 2%, and you make these decisions on it. That's why we can't move, because you do these things. And to answer your question, Mr. Fish, it is the freedom of the press. We don't mess with the press. If you don't like what they write, call them up. Commissioner Fish here, knock it off. Look, no matter what I said, makes no difference. We have to do something different, and this is not it. This is not it. It's not equity, it's racism. All of us have to look in the mirror in the morning and say, where am I in this whole craziness? Including activists, including politicians, and including people that are on the street. Thank you.
Okay, next.
The next three are Charles Johnson, Dan Handelman, and Stephen Entwistle.
Mr. Johnson, I think you're first.
Good morning, commissioners.
Definitely not morning, but
yes, I know, but not my usual time. Good late afternoon, commissioners. For the record, my name is Charles Johnson, and I was glad to see that OEHR and this conversation was facilitated. And I think that we can be a little bit self-satisfied that we have hopefully been proceeding better than other jurisdictions, Ferguson, Staten Island, and the whole of New York on this issue. But of course, we won't really know unless we go a long period without having anyone, but especially people of color, killed or injured by the police. And I think that the conversation might have been even more interesting if, particularly you, Mayor Hales, as police commissioner, worked with the chief to have the facts more in our face about the time spent. You know, in some workplaces, you walk on the job and there's a sign that says certain number of days without injury. And I may move to pressure you to work with the Portland police to have Pete Simpson keep it right up in front of our face how many days the city has gone without having a situation where citizens had to litigate against the police department, how many days we've gone since a citizen was injured or killed by police, and also how many days we've gone that officers have been able to keep themselves safe or not been targeted or injured by violent suspects. I think sometimes we're caught up in a national drama where we're facing the real serious challenges of racism, but we're not addressing the factual issues. So I hope that Chief O'Day and yourself and the other staff there will work to have the information out there so that when we have success, we can look at it and not gloat over it, but see how we can broaden that success to make it stronger and better and have Portland be the community we would like it to be. And I'm sure we're going to hear some more specific facts as my testimony yields to Mr. Handelman.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. I, too, was very glad to learn that these conversations were happening and that the end result was published and reported here publicly. I'm disappointed in the turnout this afternoon. I think more people should have heard this, and I'm hoping that there'll be a continuation of the discussion. And I hope that the city employees can feel comfortable talking with members of the general community as well as police officers, because I think that there a lot could be learned from that. I think it's interesting that the chief mentioned the racial profiling statistics that came out shortly after these discussions. I wonder if the discussion would have been any different had people seen that those numbers aren't really moving, that we're at 12.8% of the traffic stops are still African Americans in 2013, when we've been at that number more or less on or off for the entire 2001 to 2013 period. So we haven't really moved those numbers despite all these discussions. In terms of the good news, I'm unfortunately, Nick Fish isn't here to hear this, but, you know, one of the early things we learned when we were working on police accountability as an issue was the similarities between police violence and domestic violence, where people will say, oh, I know him, he'd never do anything like that. And people say that about the police until it happened to them or somebody they know.
And so sometimes it comes off as ignoring the violence that we know the police are doing on the community when we put out these happy stories. So I just want to make sure that people bear that in mind, that there's an element of post-traumatic stress out there by people who've been victims of police misconduct and violence when they see any stories about the police. This morning you had an item on your agenda about the office space for the COCL, and discussion came up here about the DOJ agreement. I just, as a side note, our group's name was mentioned in that paperwork for that item as people that might testify, but we weren't reached out to by your office, Mayor Hales. I don't know why our name would be mentioned if nobody asked if we knew about the agenda item or were willing to testify. But, you know, I need to take the opportunity, as always, to mention that this appeal is still sitting there in the Ninth Circuit, and that this paragraph here that, Mayor Hales, you held up the last time we talked about this, specifically talks about that the judge does not have the authority to order the annual hearings, and that no matter what your spokesperson says to me or your staff says to me, I know how to read, and I know that's what it says. Some of the good things in this report include the discussion about the park rangers not having weapons and to be able to teach the police how to maybe patrol without weapons. It's very often these discussions, like the discussion we had about the crowd control, there's not enough focus on the police violence, but it looks like the city employees weren't afraid to bring up those issues. And they talked about psychological testing after shootings, but I think there should be more focus on how to reduce the use of violence. And in terms of releasing the names of the officers who have been disciplined, there is exemption in state law for when it's in the public interest to release names of employees. I'm not sure why the city doesn't just take advantage of that and say this is in the public interest. But the police review board report that came out a couple of weeks ago is a humorous almost example of redacting information where the genders of people were blocked out. And we played Mad Libs with that report, and we sent out our analysis of that to you yesterday. I hope you had time to read it.
Thank you. That was
Hi, Council. My name is Stephen Entwistle. I represent Healing Man Sanctuary, Individuals for Justice, and 100 Million Friends. And it's just a shame that I couldn't give my other 3 minutes to Dan Handelman here because he had a lot of good information. And it's also a real shame that Nick Fish and Dan Saltzman, our commissioners, aren't here on this very important issue. I think that tells a lot. Our country started in racism started here in this country in 1492 and has not left. All the infrastructure of America that is loved so much was built on racism. Everything you see in front of you, the clothes that you wear, the chairs that you're sitting on, the table that you're at, was built on racism. And racism has not left here, okay? It is still here. Portland is a racist town. I'll say that again. Portland is a racist town. It always has been. I've lived here for 55 years. I know, okay? I've seen it. Why do I know I'm a white person? Well, I just happen to have 4 black children and 6 black grandchildren, okay? I've seen a lot, okay? Inside and outside, we're on the outside right now, on the inside of the system, okay, the jails, okay, where anything goes for these folks, okay, why are we hiring racism as law enforcement? That does us no good, okay? Do I have to prove it? You don't believe it. You look like you don't believe it. Well, it's true, okay? And we're going to have a meeting tomorrow on the county, and we're going to expose a lot of this, okay, because there's a lot of issues with county jail system, the whole thing. It all needs to be abolished as we know it, abolished, not reformed. You cannot reform this. Capitalism equals racism, okay? You guys are capitalists, okay? It's like Noam Chomsky said, okay, let's take a big picture and let's focus it down into one little, and let's have a lively discussion on this small, tiny little point. Okay, that's what we're doing here. Anyway, We got a wealth disparity here, okay? Billionaires not paying their taxes, okay? You wonder why we have a housing problem, okay? Big corporations, so corrupt, reform is out of the question. Abolishment of the prison system is absolutely necessary. Politically motivated racism, new Jim Crow laws, is alive and well in Portland, and so is white privilege. Okay, good cops need to blow the whistle on the racist cops. They should not be afraid to. They should not be afraid for their jobs to be able to explain, and you shouldn't be afraid for your job to expose racism yourself, all of you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, anyone else?
The last person who signed up is Paul Stewart.
Come on up. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, City Council. So I'm Paul Stewart, Portland Housing Bureau. I'm also a member of the Citywide Equity Committee. First, I want to thank you for your contributions to allowing the conversation to happen that we had over the last couple of months led by OEHR. Appreciate that, and while it might not represent necessarily a palpable change, I think it represents something, and it's worth pointing out. So I guess what I wanted to offer here today was that, well, I wanted to point out, I didn't think it was interesting that this hearing came after the Portland Housing Bureau's North Northeast report. That was interesting, kind of that connection between Ferguson and Portland, so a lot of the same themes we're talking about here. And what I wanted to do today was just humbly challenge the City Council to challenge your workforce. I think we can do a better job of bringing you all brilliant ideas. Strong analyses. I think you can challenge your directors, senior management, middle management, staff to do a better job of seeing the equity angles, the racial equity angles that exist in all of our work, and to do a better job of normalizing that conversation at the Bureau level so that we can ultimately be better partners with the community and accomplish the ends that, you know, we really need to get to. So I think I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thank you for participating.
I think you're officially the last person testifying. So you're also in the video.
Yes, I am.
And what do you do for the Housing Bureau?
Financial analyst. So I should be back trying to balance our requested budget, but I felt compelled to be here today.
Thank you.
We appreciate you doing this.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thanks very much. Okay, I believe we have heard... The list, and I'm looking for
motion to adopt the report.
Before you just a second, could we have done
yes,
Director James back?
Yes, Director James, want to pepper you with a question or two?
Well, first, thank you for bringing this report, for hanging in there while our previous report ran over an hour, and the four of us who are here are very much appreciative of having had this opportunity for discussion for people to come. So, good work. What are the next steps?
Well, the next steps are, I think, a couple. One, some version of this conversation will continue for city employees. I think, Paul expressed it well in terms of the overall feeling of what was in the room each time, was that employees' desire for their seniors, their management, their electeds, to challenge the Bureau to do better and create expectations of directors and managers to do better. I think that clearly was the overall context from most of these conversations, certainly as it related to the Police Bureau, but specifically broadly as it relates to equity, to do that and to challenge your staff to do better. And then the office is going to be bringing, we're doing varieties of things related to equity, budget equity tools, strategic, the roadmap for the bureaus, other things through the budget office and across. But we'll be coming with really a set of overall umbrella equity goals that each of you would be able to hold your bureaus accountable to. And really that's hopefully what we can then get to, so that there's some very concrete specifics where you would be able to say to your directors, how are you helping us achieve this equity goal in the city of Portland? And it should be a very concrete answer or not.
And so, that strategy will come within the next few months?
Yes, ma'am.
And you're ideally, this would be a consistent standard we work into our annual letters of expectation with the measurements around performance linked to success in those areas, as well as the other things that we identify as priorities for our bureau directors.
Correct.
That's about as tangible as you can get.
trying to do something.
Other questions?
Yes.
Anything else for Dante before we vote?
Director James, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate the fact that this conversation took place, appreciated seeing the suggestions. I wish that we were having this conversation earlier in the day, because to be honest, after an early morning meeting and being here all day, I don't think I'm sufficiently engaged. And I just made a note to myself to email you next Friday, which is the day I think I'll have some time, to ask you to send again the list of employee suggestions, because I want to have a chance to look at it when I'm not exhausted.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
And a good point. Let's schedule that follow-up presentation
earlier,
by time 30 certain in the morning.
A little earlier, yes.
It would be a mercy to Dante as well as others. Great. Any other comments before we take a vote? Then a roll call, please.
Fritz? Well, thank you to the 200 employees who dared to participate, including the officer that we saw in uniform. That must have been somewhat challenging to show up and to be real. And so I very much appreciate. I liked what Paul Stewart said, don't underestimate your employees to come up with brilliant suggestions. Mm-hmm. And time again, our employees do come up with wonderful suggestions, and we need to hear them. And then we need to challenge our directors and our managers and all of our employees to do better. I am seeing throughout the city a growing awareness that we are not the city government that we need to be, and we are willing to change. I went to the Angela Davis lecture at Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Lecture at Portland State University last week. She was one of my heroes growing up in England and seeing the work that she was doing, so I was pretty thrilled to be there. She said, some people think that it's up to black folks to change this system, and that is wrong. So to the charge that we're five white folk, or four white folk sitting up here right now, and one woman, yes, that is true. And historically, there have been two people of color on the city council. I'm the seventh woman ever to serve. I'm an immigrant, so we do not reflect the community as a whole, and it is still our responsibility to make our community better. It is actually us, we, the majority culture, who have the power to make the changes, and it shouldn't be up to only folks of people of color to do that advocacy, to be partners. We need to work together. And that's, I'm very pleased with the work of the Office of Equity and Human Rights in fostering those conversations and having these really courageous conversations throughout the city. It's very important work, and it's informing our work for the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement, which we now have this wonderful Community Oversight Advisory Board and a team of compliance officers who are going to be working with us on police specifically. I'm hoping that there will be some overlap with other bureaus to look at the issues of institutional racism and what we need to do about them in parks, what do we need to do about them in development services, what do I need to do about them in my office. So thank you very much for this important work. Aye.
Fish?
Dante, I've launched a process, a national search for a new director at the Bureau of Environmental Services. And one of the things that we have put in place is some focus groups at the front end to ask people what kind of leader are we looking for and what are the qualities we're looking for. And then we'll have some process at the end where the finalists are exposed to a diverse group of people. We've asked employees to participate in the front end piece to say what kind of leader are we looking for, what are some of the qualities, and I haven't been at the helm of this bureau for that long. So one of the things I want to do is engage the employees in identifying, you know, what are our strengths or weaknesses, and then how does that inform the decision for the next leader? This idea of engaging our employees more dynamically and the challenge from our friend from the Housing Bureau, I think, is very well taken. In our work, sometimes it's figuring out the right way to do that. and probably we need to be more spending more time listening to our employees, telling us what's the right way to do that. So I appreciate very much this dialogue. And look, there are always going to be critics who say you haven't done enough or you've done too little or this isn't